This is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. Walk down the aisles of the grocery store and it's clear. Our culture is obsessed with protein. From pudding, the pancake mix, to milk, beef, supplements, and smoothies, we can't seem to get enough of it. Could too much protein, though, actually be making you sick or worse, be killing you? Also, for those people that eat and drink healthy, could the containers, cups, and plates you eat on be causing disease? Kim and I are going to digest on these topics, and we're going to also share the health risks of sleeping with contact lenses. Don't go away. Chew on This starts now.
It's time for Chew on This, your health and wellness headlines and media propaganda report with Dr. David Friedman and Miss Tell It Like It Is, the author of the Skinny Bitch book series, Kim Bar Nguyen.
Hey, welcome to the show. Our first story made international headlines last week. Megan Hefford, a 25-year-old fitness competitor, died after taking too much protein. She had a urea cycle disorder that affects 1 in 8,500 people. Most are undiagnosed. When taking excessive protein, it causes a buildup of ammonia in the blood and a loss of brain function. Now, this isn't 1 in 50 million people, folks. This condition affects 1 in 8,500 people that are at risk of potentially dying from taking too much protein. Now, Kim, what are your thoughts on this never-ending mega protein craze?
Yeah, it's funny. We could talk about protein forever because I know we've covered it before, but it's the vegan's question of the day. You know, people always ask, how do you get your protein? I don't think you're getting enough. Well, it turns out we're actually getting not just more than enough, but actually like half to two times the daily recommended intake of protein. So it doesn't surprise me. It's very sad, though, what happened to her. But we don't need as much protein as people think.
Yeah, you know, and actually, how much protein do we really need? According to the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, we only need 2.5% of our daily calories from protein. So what that means is this. If you eat the recommended 2,000 calories per day, only 50 calories should come from protein sources. So as Kim said, it's quite easy to get that much protein from fruits, vegetables, beans, nuts, and grains. We don't need the big slab of T-bone steak, do we, Kim?
No, and people think, you know, it's one of the most questioned things, I think, you know, in nutrition people are talking about. And I know lots of people that work out and they just are pounding on the protein thinking this is going to, you know, solve everything for them. But, you know, there isn't a lot of evidence that shows, you know, packing on this extra protein is actually going to, you know, turn you into this, you know, huge, you know, the Rock or something, because extra protein can also be stored as fat. Mm-hmm. You can get extra weight gain in the long run, and your kidneys are working so hard for all this extra protein and the nitrogen that's producing. So it's not great for you to have too much protein.
Yeah, and you mentioned bodybuilders. They are notorious for overindulging in the beef and the milk protein and the big supplements to get big and strong. I always pose the question, Kim, how does an elephant grow to 10,000 pounds by eating nothing but plant food? I mean, they couldn't grow so big and strong if plants weren't loaded with enough protein. Or a prize-winning racehorse. They get their protein from plants.
Right, exactly. So, you know, you think about this, and you know, even when you eat vegetables or, you know, seeds and nuts and grains and, you know, lentils, like you were saying, they're plenty really healthy sources of protein, and you're getting fiber with as well because, you know, you're packing on, you know, meat or dairy right. for extra protein, but you're not getting enough fiber so you can get constipated and bloated and, you know, leads to all other issues. But, you know, sticking to vegetable sources or nuts or seeds are such a better way to get protein.
True, and we won't even open up the can of worms regarding the Atkins diet and the recent keto fad diet that they push that high animal protein. But I will share this. I had a patient who was on a high-protein diet eating bacon and steak every day, Kim. His liver started to shut down. This man almost died. You know, unlike carnivores, whose livers are large and they can process this excessive protein, the liver of a human being cannot. We just weren't designed to massive megadose on protein.
Yeah. I you know, and it's so sad, too, because, so many people. And I feel like there was another story about a bodybuilder that had, I don't know if he passed away, but there was another story about a bodybuilder that was ginormous and had too much protein intake, and there was something on the news about that as well. So I feel like this is, you know, kind of becoming an issue.
Yeah. One thing I want to mention, even if you don't have the genetic disorder that caused Megan's protein consumption to kill her, anyone eating too much protein, it can still harm you. Excessive protein consumption produces nitrogen byproducts that your kidneys have to work to filter out. So if you're eating a normal amount of protein, you pee it out, you know, the nitrogen, it's no concern. But when you gorge on massive quantities of beef or protein supplements, you force your kidneys to work harder to get rid of that extra nitrogen. And that has the potential of causing kidney damage. And as Kim, you and I have always said, everything in moderation. People are so excessive. It's this all or nothing principle.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, you don't need to go overboard. Just make sure you have a, you know, well-balanced diet and you're eating healthy and, you know, shouldn't be a problem.
Exactly. Now, hopefully this tragic death of this healthy 25-year-old lady is going to encourage maybe the food and supplement industry to enforce some stricter regulations on protein, because I think that people have this theory on protein that's just not true.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, you know, in the bodybuilding and, you know, and athletes, they have such a tendency to over consume the protein. So hopefully that'll, you know, serve as a good example to what not to do.
Exactly. Okay, our next headline comes from the Miami Herald. Attention, Moscow Mule fans. The solid copper mug that has become the signature cup for the alcoholic beverage is unsafe to drink and could be poisoning you. The Iowa Alcohol Beverage Division examined what happens when copper mixes with liquids like wine, vodka, fruit juice, and lemons. These low pH items can leach the copper out of the cup and into the beverage, creating toxicity to those that drink it. Now, this brings up a great topic for Kim and I to chew on. So many people, even those that eat healthy and drink healthy items, they don't realize that the plates, the cups, the pots, the pans that you use have negative effects on your health. Kim, in your books, you've delved into this topic. What's your take on this recent Moscow Mule finding?
Yeah, you know, this was really, really good. And it was, you know, hopefully eye-opening for people because, you know, like we had talked about plastics, you know, heating them up and they can leach into your food. But this is also the case with copper. And I think if you pay attention to if your mug is lined with, you know, something like a stainless steel, you're good to go. But if it's just pure copper, then you're going to run into some problems. But it goes the same way with pans. And I did a lot of research for one of my books about, you know, the good pans to use and ones that are potentially dangerous. And copper pans are very popular and they're very good to use, but you have to make sure that they're lined with a stainless steel or something, because you don't want foods to come in direct contact with just the raw copper. It's really not good for you.
Yeah, and you've also covered in your books, and we've shared on the show about the bisphenol A, the BPA. That's a toxic compound found in plastics. I mean, folks, this has been associated with increased risk of cardiovascular disease, miscarriages, breast and prostate cancer, diabetes, some neurological disorders. What it does is it leaches from plastic containers that are exposed to heat. So if you're using these containers in your microwave, that's bad news. BPAs can leach out into your food. Kim, what about bottled water? A lot of people leave these plastic containers in their hot car. That's one of my pet peeves.
Right, exactly. You know, and I think that it's, and people, I've seen parents do this too, heating, you know, food up for their kids in plastic containers, you know, all the time. I've been in my friends' cars and their bottles of water is, you know, you could use for hot tea by the time you actually get back into your car in the summer because they're so hot. And then I've had people say, oh, I'm just going to put it back in my fridge and, you know, cool it down and drink it again. And you think, no, not a good idea. You know, what the heat has just done to it, and you're going to be drinking it, and it's going to be bad for your health. So, and, you know, people think, oh, well, it's not going to do anything to me. But, you know, you keep doing this over time, and you are going to have some health effects from it.
Exactly. You know, some of these thermoses on the market are lined with plastic, and people pour their hot coffee and tea into these as well, not even thinking. I mean, we're saying stuff to people, they go, I never knew. Is that bad for you? And it's sad that we just have this trust and faith that if we're drinking out of a container, it's safe for us.
Right. And, you know, we've had the issues with the Food and Drug Administration, things that they recommend, but even they are talking about this, the copper mug, saying that, you know, you have to be careful because any kind of acidic foods or drinks that get in contact with it, it's dangerous. So we know if they're saying it's not good for you, my goodness, you better pay attention to that.
Exactly. And Kim, you know, these copper bracelets people wear all the time, have you ever noticed that there's a create a green film on their skin, on their wrist or bracelets. It actually comes off on their skin. Now, folks, think about this. Would you take your copper bracelet off and lick your wrist and get that stuff in your system? No, that sounds gross. That's what you're doing when you're drinking from these copper mugs. It's leaching in and you're getting that in your drink. So hopefully that visual gets people to go, wow, he's right. That stuff leaching on my on my skin, it's probably getting in my drinks as well.
Exactly. So really just, you know, paying attention to what your, you know, your mug is lined with, or your pan is lined with, or, you know, paying attention, like we've talked about, if, you know, BPA-free plastics, really keeping an eye out for that. Because like you said, it's not just about what you eat, but, you know, what you're putting your food in as well, and how you're consuming that.
Yeah. And, you know, they have BPA-free on the label. You can look for that. And if you don't see it, just, you know, use cold food in the containers. Never use them in the microwave. Consider buying foods in glass jars. I know they're a little bit more expensive, but you can reuse the jar for storage, which is a bonus.
Right, exactly. And even there's metal container, you know, the containers you're getting, you know, canned vegetables. You have to pay attention to that, and a lot of companies are, you know, if you just look for the labels, it'll tell you, you know, they're safe to consume, there's, you know, no chemicals, they're going to leach in your food, and just, you know, be mindful of what you're buying.
Yeah, you brought up a good point about the pots and pans. I mean, the aluminum pots and pans are still available, and it's been linked to Alzheimer's disease, and people eat out of them all the time. There's one exception, cast iron skillets. Having iron leaching into your food is actually a good thing for some people that are deficient in iron. So that's the exception, particularly premenopausal women. But if you suffer from hemochromatosis or an iron overload disease, not a good idea to cook an iron skillet. Just realize that, you know, you know that saying, Kim, you are what you eat? It should be, you
exactly.
are what you are what you eat on. I like that better.
Exactly.
You are what you eat on. It's crazy. Do you remember Teflon pots and pans when you were growing up, Kim?
Oh, absolutely, I do.
My mom cooked on these.
It was a huge thing.
Yeah, my mom cooked on these when I was a kid. I remember seeing flakes come off that pan and into my food. And, of course, I probably ate some of the Teflon, which would explain why I'm so weird and why my right eye spins out of control sometimes.
Right. I've got that weird tick, too. I went through the same thing.
Isn't that fun? And literally, and she'd cook on it, and I'd see it's like it's almost – have you ever had a sunburn where your skin's peeling? This is what my mom's
Absolutely.
Pots and pans look like. They look like peeling skin, and she'd cook on. I'm like, well, we didn't know. Back then, you didn't know.
We
I think people
know.
People are smarter now. We kind of look at things going, you know, just because I buy it in the store doesn't mean it's always good for me. We have this trust factor that I think we're starting to get a little bit more of a wall in front of us saying, wait a minute, that doesn't smell right to me. That, you know, we kind of trust our instincts.
Yeah, definitely. And it's good. You know, the more awareness that people have of this, then, you know, it makes them look around to all areas of how they're treating their body. And, you know, and I think you said something about the iron skillets, and that's really coming back now, and that's, you know, it's exciting. They're great to cook in, great to bake in, and a lot of chefs are, you know, it's on the food shows now. A lot of people are using that, so I'm glad it's kind of making its comeback, because that's a really good way to cook and bake.
Yeah, so good topic, because like I said, people don't think, some people listening, that, you know, they're pure, they eat right, extra virgin olive oil, they get everything organic, and they throw it on this aluminum pot and pan or something that Teflon can, you know, the Teflon has perfluorinated chemicals, and when you heat them, they go right into your food, and people don't know that, so they're eating organic, great stuff, but they're eating these chemicals. So hopefully you'll pay a little bit more attention to that. Craziness. All right, our next headline will go in our Chew on This News of the Weird file. This one is from the NPR. A 67-year-old woman goes in for cataract surgery, and the doctor removes 27 contact lenses from her eyes that had been accumulating for years. She had no idea they were in her eyes until the surgeon pulled them out. Now, Kim, I'm one of those that can't wear contact lenses. Having one in my eye for 5 minutes irritates me to no end. Can you imagine having 27 contacts in your eyes and living with it?
Oh, my God. I'm the same way. I tried to do contacts a couple times, and I can't. 4 seconds, and I'm, you know, I'm twitching. I need to get it out of my eye. I'm right there with you. I cannot imagine having that many contacts. Or let alone that you don't remember that you never took it out that many times is astounding.
It's crazy. And I wanted to chew on this headline, not necessarily because it's weird and quirky, which is right up our alley, but it's actually a serious topic. Leaving contacts in your eyes at night can harbor bacteria. It acts like a petri dish, leading to infection. And this can lead to corneal ulcers and even blindness. It also diminishes a reflex called the corneal reflex in your eye, a protective mechanism that makes you shut your eye when an object is flying toward you. You know, when you see something flying toward you, how you cringe. That
right.
reflex is ignored when you wear contact lenses all the time. It causes your body to ignore that natural corneal reflex. So even if your contacts,
a good point.
So if the contacts, say, Kim, leave them in overnight, and now, Kim, the people leave them in for 1 month, it's still best to take them out, let your eyes breathe.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think that, you know, if you get used to them, that's great, but, you know, you do need to give your eye a break. And, yeah, I don't think they're meant to be put in your eyes for that long. So, yeah, definitely kind of, you know, pay attention to when you put your contacts in. Definitely take them out, clean them, you know, let your eyes. Do you really need to see when you're sleeping? I mean, maybe get a little pair of glasses next to your bed or something if you need to wake up in the middle of the night and go to the bathroom.
Yeah, some of these guys are saying, oh, I dream about these beautiful models and Baywatch. I want to see everything. No, you don't need contact lenses for that. Keep them out. Your dreams have 20/20. You don't need contacts in your eyes at night.
Right.
It's crazy. Kim, have you ever been in the car like in the day and you get that beam of sunlight and you see all these particles floating? You ever see that? Or maybe through the window of your home?
Definitely.
Those little particles floating, you know, that dust and the free radicals, that stuff hits your contact lenses, and every single day they build up and build up. Can you imagine they build up for a month and not taking them out and cleaning them?
Yeah, that's not a good idea.
You know, it's not. And people get desensitized, like you mentioned before. You said, you know, even if you get used to it, don't keep it. The reason you're getting used to it is your eyes are getting desensitized. You're actually ruining the sensitivity so that you just don't feel them in there. Or if they're clogged or there's pieces in there or dust, you just don't notice it anymore because your eyes are getting unsensitive to that. But take them out. It's definitely – even eye doctors will tell you. Eye doctors will say take them out every day. I know the label says every month or every once a week or whatever these are. They recommend. They know the importance of letting your eyes breathe.
Yeah, really important. I mean, these are your eyes. You know, you have to really, really be careful with them. And I think that's an important point that you said too. You know, your reflex, when you've got something coming at your eye, if you're kind of weakening that as time goes by, that could be dangerous as well. I mean, I appreciate having that reflex to close my eye and, you know, don't let anything in it. So that was it's an interesting one as well.
Yeah, I just thought of something funny. I wonder if any of the listeners are listening go, you know, I can never find my contact storage case. I'll just put two contacts in my eye in the back and I'll have a storage. So now there's another term for being called four eyes because they got four contact lenses.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, Doc Freeman and Kim gave me a great idea. I'll just store these two extra pair in the back when I travel.
Oh, my gosh. And I'm sure, probably do that.
It's crazy. I'll tell you, some of this stuff we talk about here, it's insane. We have a question from a listener. Amy from Dallas asks, Dear Dr. Freeman and Kim, I need to lose weight, but I don't have patience to read a 300-page book. If you could offer me one easy-to-follow suggestion on how I could lose weight, what would it be? Kim, this is a question we've been asked a few times over the years. What's your go-to quick and easy skinny bitch tip for Amy?
Oh, you know, one is so hard, but you know, I think it's just important. You really need to cut out the junk food. You know, when I first started going vegan and vegetarian, I was the biggest junk food eater, and I couldn't figure out why my weight wasn't changing or anything was happening. Well, I was eating junk food, and I wasn't understanding that just because you may be cutting certain things or calling yourself, you know, I'm going to follow this particular diet, just stick to a nice, healthy, you know, well-balanced diet. That's the first thing that I always tell people. Cut out the junk, eat a nice, well-balanced diet, and it's a good start.
It's so funny because you bring up a point. There's a lot of vegans that are overweight. Some are obese, and you kind of wonder how. You know, like you just said, they may be eating tons of pasta and candies and, you know, stuff that's vegan, but it's still not good for you. It's still junk food. So you bring up a good point.
Exactly.
People hear vegan and they go, oh, that's the epitome of health. It can be if they kind of go that other side, as you mentioned, if it's done right. You know, for almost 3 decades, I pretty much recommended a simple eating plan for my patients. It works. Simply live by the mantra, if it's white, keep it out of sight. And when I say white, I'm referring to white foods that have been processed, you know, and refined, like milk, flour, pasta, bread, crackers, cereal, anything sweetened with table sugar or high fructose corn syrup. There are a few natural natural exceptions to my rule here. It's cauliflower, garlic, mushrooms, onions, coconut, white fish, and white poultry meat. Those are okay whites. The biggie, though, to avoid is processed sugar. Reach for alternatives, as Kim and I have shared, stevia, xylitol. Those are some good ones. What are some eat this, not that swaps that you like, Kim? Can you share one for us?
Eat this, not this. I think, you know, when I made the switch from white rice to brown rice, that was a really big one for me. And I think it's such a good, and when you were talking about, you know, avoid the white things, it's just a little swap, whether it's, you know, whole grain pasta or brown rice. Those are just things that really made a big difference in my diet. So that's a good piece of advice I like as well.
Yeah, one that I like is, you know, the salt. It's so much salt is everywhere. Salt's good for us. We need it, but we go overboard. And so to use that white rule, stay away from white processed salt. Go with the pink salt. It's Himalayan salt. It's got more minerals, nutrients, or black volcanic salt. Have you ever tried that, Kim?
No, but I've been using that pink Himalayan salt lately, and I really like it.
Yeah, it's good. I've been using the black volcanic salt. It's really good. It's real fine, and like I said, you're just getting that minerals from the rocks, and you're not getting that high sodium as much. And you're getting, you know, when you balance it out with some good minerals, you can really enhance the health. Because, you know, we are 70% salt water. We need salt. People say, oh, no salt. No, you have to have salt, but we just go overboard. You know, when we cry, our tears are salty. We're made out of salt water. So if you drink a lot of water and you're great with water, but you know what? You're flushing out that sodium. We need some, but just do the right kind, you know. As Kim said, there's good, bad. You got the good rice. You can still kind of eat everything you want, Kim. There's just kind of like a do this, don't do that. There's substitutes.
Exactly. And it's just kind of being mindful of, you know, making a good choice over maybe a not so good choice. One that, you know, just because you grew up eating that doesn't mean that that's either, you know, the best for you or something that you need to continue. So just kind of be open-minded to trying something new and, you know, adding new things to your diet and replacing with something a little bit better. And you notice some health benefits.
Exactly. Well, thanks, Amy, for that question. If you have a question for Kim and I, of course, or any suggestions for a Chew on This topic, you can email us at chewonthis@toyourgoodhealthradio.com. Always a pleasure getting information from our listeners. And Kim, it's always a pleasure dining with you. It's been great. We've shared a diverse plate of headlines that will hopefully make a difference in some listeners' lives today.
Oh, definitely. You know what? It's so nice to be able to help people, and hopefully they'll, you know, take a little bit of what we say and use it in their daily life.
Exactly. Well, that concludes another edition of Chew on This. We, of course, are your dynamic duo of due diligence here to help you digest all the latest headlines. Make sure you check out our new website, toyourgoodhealthradio.com. You'll find a Chew on This podcast library. We've covered some really interesting topics over the years, and now you have access to all of them in one easy-to-find podcast library. Some of our health features will keep you informed. Some are going to make you angry. And quite a few of them are going to make you laugh out loud. ToYourGoodHealthRadio.com. Click on the Chew on This graphic on the homepage and share these segments with friends and family. They need to be informed just like you were today. You can also subscribe to our future Chew on This podcast on iHeartRadio and iTunes. More to come. Stay tuned and stay well.